Louisa sent Buckart to call for help from the men at the lager, and they carried Zama back on a litter. He had received a dangerous wound at an oblique angle through the chest, and Louisa feared for his life, but she hid her anxiety. As soon as they reached the lager, Intepi came running to help her nurse him. "He is hurt, but he will live," he told the weeping girl, as they laid Zama on the cardel bed in the spare wagon. With the help of the books and the medicine chest Sarah Courtney had given her, and by dint of much practice and experience, Louisa had become a proficient physician over the months since they had left the Kharib River. She made a more thorough examination of the wound and exclaimed with relief, "The ball has gone clean through and out the other side. That's most propitious. We won't have to cut for it, and the danger of mortification and gangrene is much reduced." Jim left Zama to the women and took out his concern and anger on Rashud. With arms and legs spread-eagled like a starfish, they lashed him to the spokes of one of the big rear wagon wheels and jacked the rim clear of the ground. Jim waited for him to recover consciousness. In the meantime, Small Boy brought in the body of another Arab they had found lying close to where he had captured Rashud. This one had died from loss of blood. A horn wound in his groin had severed the big artery there. When they turned him face up, Jim recognized him as another of the sailors from the gift. "This one is Haban," he said. "It is indeed Haban," agreed Small Boy. "There is something going on here that stinks like rotten fish," Jim said. "I know not what it is, but this one can give us the answers." He glared at Rashud, still hanging unconscious on the rear wheel of the wagon. "Throw a bucket of water over him." It needed not one, but three buckets flung into his face to revive him. "Salam, Rashud," Jim greeted him as he opened his eyes. "The beauty of your countenance lightens my heart. You are a servant of my family. Why did you attack our wagons and try to kill Zama, a man you know well as my friend?" Rashud shook the water from his beard and long, lank hair. He stared back at Jim. He did not speak, but the expression in his eyes was eloquent. "We must loosen your tongue, beloved of the prophet," Jim stepped back and nodded to Small Boy. "Give him 100 turns of the wheel." Small Boy and Muntu spat on their hands and seized the rim. They began to spin it between them. Small Boy counted the turns. The speed built up swiftly until the image of Rashud's revolving body blurred before their eyes. Small Boy lost the count after 50 and had to start again. When at last he called the 100 and they braked the wheel, Rashud was writhing weakly against his bonds, his dirty robe drenched with sweat. His eyes were unfocused and he was heaving and gasping with vertigo. "Rashud, why were you riding with Kurtz? When did you join his band? Who was the strange Arab with you, the man with the green turban?" Despite his distress, Rashud turned his eyes towards Jim and tried to focus on him.
"Infidel," he blurted. "Kafir, I act by virtue of the sacred fatwa of the Caliph Zayn al-Din of Muscat and at the command of his Pasha, General Kadim ibn Abu Bakr. The Pasha is a great and holy man, a mighty warrior and beloved of God and the Prophet."
"So, the one in the green turban is a Pasha. What are the terms of this fatwa?" Jim demanded.
"They are too sacred to be spoken into the ear of the profane."
"Rashud has discovered religion," Jim shook his head sadly. "I have never heard him prate such bigoted and venomous nonsense before." He nodded to Small Boy. "Give him another 100 turns on the wheel to cool his ardour." The wheel blurred again, but before they reached the count of 100, Rashud vomited in a long, sustained jet. Small Boy grunted at Muntu.
"Don't stop!"
Then Rashud's bowels loosened and his bodily excretions erupted simultaneously from both ends of his body like a deck hose. At the 100 count, they braked the wheel. But Rashud's befuddled senses could not tell the difference. The sensation of violent movement seemed to become stronger, and he moaned and vomited until his stomach was empty. Then he heaved and dry-retched painfully. "What were the terms of the fatwa?" Jim insisted.
"Death to the adulterers."
Rashud's voice was barely audible, and yellow bile ran down his chin into his beard.
"Death to Al-Salil and Princess Yasmini."
Jim recoiled at the mention of those two beloved names. "My uncle and aunt? Are they dead? Tell me they are still alive, or I shall spin your black soul loose from your foul body." Rashud recovered his scattered senses and once more tried to oppose Jim's questions, but gradually the wheel broke down his resistance, and he answered freely. "The Princess Yasmini was executed by the Pasha. She died with a thrust through her adulterous heart." Even in his extreme condition, Rashud mouthed the words with relish, "and Al-Salil was wounded to the brink of death." Jim's anger and sorrow were overwhelming, so much so that he lost all stomach for further punishment that day. Rashud was cut down from the wheel, but chained and guarded for the rest of the night. "I will question him again in the morning," Jim said, and went to tell Louisa the terrible news. "My Aunt Yasmini was the essence of kindness and goodness. I only wish you could have met her," he said that night, as they lay in each other's arms. His tears soaked her nightdress. "Thank God my Uncle Dorian seems to have survived the assassination attempt by this fanatic, Kadim Ibn Abu Bakr."